The views and opinions expressed by hosts, invited speakers, and callers do not necessarily reflect the views and opinions of the Black Talk Media Project or the Black Talk Radio Network.
We might not be back. I might be in jail. I might be anywhere. But when I leave, you remember I said the last words on my lips. I am a revolutionary.
Revolution comes with a price tag. You were slave to a flag in a country that clearly doesn't love you when they probably never have. Told you turn the other cheek and they met it with a bat. Fucking protesting them citizens. Told you go fight in the war. Vietnam, you died, good riddance. The man of the house rule took you from your siblings. Turned around and pump crack right up in your city. And they turned all your leaders to martyrs. You was off in the war, now who was guarding your daughters? It was riots in the streets, killed Malcolm and Martin. Called a national guard up because he ride without guard up. And that was blood in your guard. It's like in the mimic on the lie to you. Everything that they taught you was a lie to you. See, they get in your skin and they die in a shoot. Take the American dream and then you die to pursue.
One day it'll all make sense. We say that about power, then it don't make sense. But none of that money matters when you live in madness. So one day you figure out that all you got is this. Peace, love, and the middle finger. Right on. Peace, love, and the middle finger. Right on. Peace, love, and the middle finger. Right on. Peace, love, and the middle finger.
For those of you who
good
don't
afternoon
know
and welcome to Black Talk Radio News. Today's date is February 8th, 2016. This is Scotty Reed broadcasting from behind the enemy lines known as USA Inc. Today we have a couple of topics we would like to discuss with you. But first, I want to apologize to the listeners for the lateness. It was unavoidable as the communications, our online communication system was just totally blocked. So had to reboot the entire system. So I just want to first apologize for the lateness. If it could have been helped, I wouldn't have been late. So, but today, two topics we want to discuss: the Flint relocation project and why I feel like this is an opinion piece, but of course I back up my opinions with facts. Why Obama is worthless to Black people. Today we will be speaking with Zion Yasharala. I hope I pronounced that correctly. And when I bring her on,
that's correct.
All right, thank you. All right, so we're going to be speaking with our guest today about the Flint Relocation Project, which is a grassroots effort to help victims of the Flint water crimes in Michigan. Let's stop calling it a crisis and call it what it is. It's the Flint water crimes. I also want to talk about something that occurred major last week. President Obama told Representative Steve Cohen, a Democrat representing a Black district in Tennessee, that he has no intentions of taking executive action to remove weed from the Drug Enforcement Agency's list of dangerous drugs, although admitting to the science that it is no more dangerous than a beer. And considering his background and his usage as a young person, and for him not to take executive action like he's taking bold executive action on gun control, expanded background checks, allowing members of the gay community to serve openly in the military. And so you have a majority of people want to remove the federal ban on cannabis, and he just sidestepped it and punted it to the GOP-led Congress. So those are some of the topics we want to talk about. But also, speaking of the CEO of USA Inc., I read an article that he visited a car show or some kind of automotive show. Y'all know he is credited with bailing out Detroit automotive industry, but he was attending something which people say it was just a stone's throw away from Flint, but he did not stop in. He did not stop in. So, I mean, what does that say? It's where we know Hillary Clinton ran up there, and some of the activists said that she was there for the entertainment, but they can speak for themselves. I do see it as exploitation when her record shows that current donors to her campaign are involved in environmental racism. All right, so it's a lot to discuss in this project, but first and foremost, the people are still there. The water's still poison. Some of the filters won't even work on it. And these people, in my opinion, need to be evacuated, as well as the people who are being held in the Flint jails, awaiting trial. I've read stories about them being forced to, first they give them bottled water, then they stop giving them bottled water, and they start back using the lead water. So, I mean, that's the crime right there. You already know. That's recent. That's not even 2 years ago. So, Sister Zion Yasharala, I want to thank you first and foremost for your efforts with the Front Location Project. But what do you make of it all, what we see going on in Flint?
I really, I agree with you totally, Scotty. I also, this is like an act of biological warfare. I don't think that people who are on the outside looking at this thing from the guise of, or the point of reference of mainstream media, actually get how dire and how crucial this situation is. I have received since I launched the project last Sunday, calls from at least 20 families, and out of those 20 families, there are small children who are involved who are testing at off the chart levels of lead and copper in their system. Many of them are sick. They have rashes. Their hair is falling out. There's so much going on in this, and that's one of the reasons why we can't afford to be apathetic towards their plight. Because, and to be honest, the Flint Relocation Project exists as a grassroots effort, and many of the calls that we've gotten from these families, they're not even seeking to move, like, far away. They want to stay somewhere local. They just want to get out of the areas where they have contaminated water and it's affecting them and their children.
Right,
and unfortunately, they're not able to, a lot of them are not able to do that. I do have some disheartening information with regard to the fact that we had a racist suspect actually call into the hotline. Very harassing. Didn't really say anything to, of course, just kind of being, mildly harassing. But they went from that to posting on Facebook. And we were notified from a resident of Flint what this person was saying. And basically they were trying to say that we were a scam and that we were setting people up. And then on the back end, this person said that people from Flint should not just pick up fakes and leave because everybody's water is not contaminated. Now understand that this was a Caucasian male that made these statements. His water might not be contaminated, but most of the families that contacted me were black families. There were a couple of Caucasian families, but the majority of them are black families, and they are the ones who are suffering the majority of the contaminated water. And it's an act of futility to continue giving them bottled water, throwing filters at the situation when they can't take a shower in bottled water.
You know, I
the contamination and the contamination far exceeds their filters. So it just doesn't make sense after a while to continue doing this. But and what irritates me is that there are people still doing it. There are people still taking bottled water, and there's still people taking, filters there. And those things are really kind of an act of futility at this juncture for many of the people in Flint.
Yes, are you able to hear me okay?
Yes, I am.
Okay. I saw a recent video of some activists distributing, it looks like a grassroots effort, distributing some water there. And one of the residents who just happened to be white that they were giving some water to, but she mentioned some of the things that I've heard in black media as well as, the people that have been commenting on it, writing articles about it, and trying to get the truth, and the evidence of this was a crime. But she was saying how, they are condemning houses, that if you don't pay the water bill, you know, they condemn the house. If the house get condemned, you know, they come in and take your children. You would think, you know what I'm saying,
mm-hmm.
that there would be a from the government side, okay, a government response would be an evacuation. If you know, why would you leave a child in a house that's with lead pipes? Let's just say it wasn't so widespread and it was my house mm-hmm. and I installed the wrong kind of pipes trying to save some money. I'm, you know what I'm saying? And need
yeah.
my children, I take them to get a physical or whatnot, and it turns up that, you know, they got lead poisoning, and I don't move them out of their house. Don't you think CPS, Child Protective Services, whatever agency of the state is called where in Michigan, don't you think they would take their child out of that situation?
Oh, most certainly, without a doubt. Without a doubt, and to be perfectly honest, I'm not so sure at this juncture that it isn't a setup, because that has happened. There's also been issues that was actually reported, I believe, by the Washington Post, where they've been, where the police have been saying that they're going to deliver water and filters to a resident and actually showed up to arrest them for one reason or another. So they're using the under the guise of giving them water and filters, they're arresting people.
Yeah, they're serving.
So this is an alarming state of affairs.
Into the 21st century slavery and human trafficking business that they've been running for centuries. That's all that is. But that is kind of low class, though. I mean, that's just you know, really disgusting that you would take advantage of an emergency just to arrest some people, to then put them in a jail where you're going to force them to drink poison water. And so you are, in effect, you know, knowing that this water is poison. To me, that's like premeditated injury and murder if death results from it. But the president has been said to have released like $85 million. Maybe you know something that I don't know, but from what I've read, is that is just to rebuild the infrastructure. And but again, considering that these people have nothing but contaminated water, none of that money that I've read has been allocated to a relocation project. And I believe that's why, you know, from reading your Facebook postings, why you started, because there is no government response to for relocation.
No, there isn't. There hasn't been any government funds allocated whatsoever to relocate people, to even help people with resources to relocate or do anything with regards to relocation. And furthermore, what I think a lot of people need to understand is that they've already stated that this is a $1.5 billion situation, and they have no plan of taking $1.5 million and spending it to correct the situation. So the money that was earmarked and that was signed off on by the Senate on last week, those nearly $90 million in all total. That money is basically earmarked for testing, for getting more bottled water and filters, and other things. It has nothing to do with the repairs that would be needed to correct the situation. Neither are those funds being allocated to relocate anybody out of that situation. So that is one of the major reasons why we need sponsors, we need volunteers, we need funding. We have families, like I said. The majority of the families really don't want to move far away. They want to move somewhere close around Flint because that's where they have family. That's where they have support systems. So they're not looking to move a few hundred miles away. I do have a couple of families. One wants to move to Houston. A couple want to move to Georgia. One family relocated there from Massachusetts and wants to return back to Boston. That's fine, but that's not the majority of the people in Flint who have called us. The majority of the people who have contacted the Flint Relocation Project are people who want to stay close to Flint, and they just want to get somewhere where they can get clean water and get themselves and their children healthy. One mother is the mother of an autistic son, and the lead contamination has basically exacerbated his autism. So I don't think that I hope that people understand the gravity of this situation and how urgent it is that we help them and that we really not wait on the government to assist them. and to help them out of this situation.
Now, you mentioned the hearings last week. Did this even come up? Did relocation even come up in the congressional hearings that was held on the Flint water crimes?
I really don't think so. I don't think that relocation was ever even mentioned. It's not something that's even been considered. Go ahead, Scotty.
Yeah, none of the representatives, you know, asked the question that was on this panel. Well, was it in the Senate, you said?
Yes.
Okay, so no senators asked what I would think would be the obvious question is, you know, is there effort to relocate these people? Is it safe for these people to be there? I mean, because we already have the answers, though. The experts have already, the scientific experts have already said that that's not safe. So the inaction on that, and I think, you know, the sticking point that the Obama administration has been citing is saying this is a man-made disaster. First of all, it's a disaster, but it is a crime first and foremost. You know,
that's
the evidence shows. But according to so-called FEMA rules, it has to be a quote-unquote natural disaster in order for the federal government, and that's just absurd. So, you know, again, cited this in the past, is how can you relocate people over 3,000 miles away in a war zone that you helped create and bring them here to the United States and pay for all of that? And I mean, that wasn't a natural disaster. So I'm just not accepting, you know, the federal response on this tragedy.
I'm not either. I'm very, it's actually kind of surreal. It feels very Twilight Zone-ish because the more and more I research this, the situation in Flint, the more I speak to families who actually live in Flint, the more disheartened I am, the more frustrated I am, and the more surreal the situation is because and just so that the listeners know, the state of emergency was actually lifted. So they're not even under a state of emergency anymore. They're still being poisoned. They're still being, you know, treated like guinea pigs, but there's no more state of emergency. So there are actually some things that they don't even qualify. The city of Flint itself does not even qualify for in terms of emergency assistance because the state of emergency has been lifted as of last week. So that's another thing to consider. So like I said, it's just surreal because when you think about the fact that the Senate just signed off on more than $90 million in total to give to the city of Flint, and it's basically they're just for testing and to give them more bottled water and more filters that don't work. And it's just ludicrous. It's sick. It's really twisted, and like you said, this is actually a crime, and that's what I think people need to understand. This is so much more than just a crisis. This is actually a crime, and this is a crime against a city that is more than 60% black. There's a reason for this happening. This is not by accident. This is by design, and we just need to pay attention. And like I said, I just pray that we can come together and show our people in Flint how much we care. I actually had a sister tell me that she thought that the project was fake because she did not believe that anybody even cared about them in Flint. She said, no one cares about us here in Flint. She said, we're here and our children are sick, people are dying, and no one's really coming here except for photo opportunities. So that says a lot, and you know, in terms of just the morale and how, you know, they feel at this point about, you know, the outside world. And I don't think that they should feel like that. I really pray that, you know, that our listeners will give us a call and contact us. And like I said, we need volunteers, we need sponsors, we need funding. I mean, just to help them with simple things. There's one family that wants to relocate to Georgia. All we need to do to provide her way back to Georgia is a gas card and money for food so that she and her daughter can go.
So
everyone else, it might be a little bit more substantial, but, you know, we need resources.
Right, right.
At this point.
Right, and how can people provide those resources?
Pardon?
How can people provide those resources? Of course,
again,
those listening on the website there or on the podcast later, the links to the Flint Relocation Project fundraiser is linked on those pages. So, but for those listening now or who won't be on a computer, how do they donate?
Please contact me at the Flint Relocation Hotline. It is 800-541-1871, or you can email me at shiftingparadigm@outlook.com. Either way, you will be directly in touch with me, and like I said, we need volunteers, we need people to sponsor families, and we need resources to help not help them stay in the situation where they are and continue to be poisoned, but to help them get out of that situation if they so desire. And this was the thing that was going on, one of the rumors that was going on about the Flint Relocation Project is that we were somehow government affiliated, that we were government funded, and that there was some kind of drive to push people out so that investors could come in and take property, and that is not the case. The majority of the people that are actually contacting us are actually not even homeowners. They don't even own land. They don't own property there in Flint.
I mean, but that's still ridiculous because, again, this is like a toxic waste zone. You know, if this was in a movie, this would be the place where they have, like, the skull and bone signs up and whatnot. This is the situation that we're talking about. But you mentioned earlier that this is 60% a black town. The black president, as he sometimes called, attended a auto rally in Detroit. And what do you think it would have meant to the people that you've talked to for the president of the United States to fall through to check in on them? I mean, he is the, you know, when they had Hurricane Sandy, he went up there with the governor and he toured, you know, the disaster. Mm-hmm. And whatnot. So here you are, just a stone's throw away, you know, maybe a 15-minute ride just outside of Detroit, and he doesn't even stop in to check on the people of Flint. What do you think that would have, you know, I mean, does that even matter? I mean, I know it doesn't matter in the context of meeting their needs, but why do you think he stayed away and didn't even, you know, seem to have any kind of empathy like he's shown for others? He showed up in South Carolina, you know, at the Charleston. He gave imitation of the black preacher at the church, and you know, so he felt enough for, okay, you know, you got a white supremacist assassin then ran up in the church and murdered nine people in cold blood. I got to go down here and I got to say some comments about racism and white supremacy. Even though he didn't do anything, pass any legislation or executive, you know, actions or anything like that. But here we're talking about where, okay, it's 60% black, but it's a whole lot of white people, too. You know what I'm saying? A whole lot of other people, too. And so we could just say, well, you know, he told us that there isn't a black America or a white America. There's one America. So why he didn't show up? But them Americans, if you had congressional hearings on this, I'm sorry, I'm on a monologue.
That's okay. I actually noticed that. I saw that, you know, there were a couple of people who posted information on Facebook about him, you know, making the Detroit Auto Show, I believe it was. And I just found it rather interesting myself that he, you know, did not find it, you know, you have celebrities even at least going to make an appearance. And he did not even think enough of the people of Flint. You know, I guess because he's not being elected anymore. He's not up for any elective office at this point. So it would not benefit him to go to Flint, you know, for even so much as a photo op or to provide moral support, which is sad on his part. And I think it's people who are paying attention will see that. And they will understand that he's really not been the president that he promised to be to the people who basically elected him into office. and the majority of people who elected him into office were black people. And he's not been the president to black people that he promised to be. And that's really just about, that's really just all there is to it.
I mean, I can't argue with those points because they're backed up, you know, by his history of 7 years in office.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's hard to come up with a logical argument as to why, but this isn't even a controversial issue like the issue I'm going to talk about later. You know, removing mm-hmm. cannabis from the scheduled list of federal drugs, and that's not even controversial, but yet he refuses to do it. And it is interesting that it does impact a predominantly black and other non-white people more than it does white people. So, you know, and it's not even a controversial issue. It's not, you know, you have a consensus. You even have people in Congress calling on him. So, again, I point you to, you think this is serious enough that the Senate held hearings, but yet here you are, a 20-minute car ride, and I think perhaps he was trying to avoid a photo op, you know, because that would look pretty bad, mm-hmm. you know, because from what I've been reading, what Michael Moore posted on social media about Flint being bombed by the United States military, you know, some of the empty houses for target practice and some of the residents mm-hmm. saying I'm in a war zone. Well, you know, I say that every day I come on air. We live in a battle zone. But it came real mm-hmm. to them, literally, with bombs and buildings being blown up, you know. So perhaps that's why he didn't go to Flint, because that would, you know, really look bad on the United States. He didn't want those pictures going out. I'm just spitballing here. Only, you know, the president can answer these questions. But since, you know, he doesn't even think enough to show up, you know, I'm left to speculate.
Exactly. Exactly. And that's all we can do is speculate, unfortunately, but he left it open for speculation because, like you said, he was about 20 minutes away. He made the concise decision not to go to Flint and at least provide some type of moral support for the people there. And that's it. That speaks volumes as to whose president he really is. And he's really not the president of the people, of the majority of the people who elected him into office and who got out and campaigned for him so vehemently to have him in office. So it's just a sad set of affairs. It is really sad.
Tell people again how they can get in contact with you and how they can, you know, volunteer or donate funds to the Flint Relocation Project, because it really is urgent, people. It really is.
Really,
I want to press that upon you. I heard somebody describe it like Three Mile Island, you know, on an environmental disaster of that magnitude. And yes, it's man-made, and so, you know, it is imperative. It just doesn't make any sense, you know, to me logically. You know, this is not it doesn't make any sense, Sister Zion. So tell people again how they can donate, get involved, what you need.
We need volunteers because I can't do this by myself. This is a very serious situation, and we're getting inundated with calls. I've actually been contacted by at least 7 people today. And like I said, last week we were contacted by more than 20 families. Now, out of those 20, about 5 of them decided that, you know, they needed to do something else because we really don't have immediate resources. Their impression was that we were getting money from the government and we were just able to issue checks, and that's not the situation. So we need volunteers, first of all. We need sponsors. We need people to sponsor families. In the event that they need to relocate somewhere where they might not have a support system, then we have someone who knows their way around in a particular area. We need sponsors in Atlanta, Georgia. We need sponsors in Houston, Texas. We need sponsors in and around Flint, Michigan, in Detroit, in Pontiac, Michigan, in Flushing, in Traverse City. We need sponsors in those areas because we have families that want to relocate in those areas. We also need resources. So So if you are in any of those cities that I just named and you have connections with resources in those areas, we need to hear from you. And we also need money, because money is what's going to help these people be able to move. It's going to help relocate them. It's also going to help us establish them. We need first month's rent. We're asking for at least some help with first month's rent and deposit for each of them, if at all possible. So that's where we are right now. And the number to contact us is 800-541-1871. Or you can contact me by email at shiftingparadigm@outlook.com.
And that's a perfect segue to, I wanted to introduce you to my listeners as also part of the Black Talk Radio Network broadcasting family. And you just recently launched a Sunday program on the network. It comes on at 12:30 p.m. Eastern time every Sunday afternoon.
Yeah.
Called Shifting Paradigm. So can you just give people a brief synopsis about that program and how do you like Black Talk Radio Network thus far?
I love Black Talk Radio. Before I was even a host for a show, my children and I have always listened to Black Talk Radio for at least the past year and a half. So it's constantly on in my home. I love it. I love the host, the various shows, the various programming, and it's very educational. It's very edifying. So it's an honor to have the opportunity to be a host on Black Talk Radio. And Shifting Paradigms is basically that. I want to help to shift the paradigms and the mindset of our people so that we can come together as a community and rid ourselves of a lot of the perceptions that have been forced upon us as a result of racism, white supremacy. We've had several shows with regard to eco-terrorism. Well, I just did a show last week with regard to eco-terrorism and environmental racism dealing with Flint. This coming Sunday, I will actually have a guest from Flint, Michigan, by the name of Lisa Quaid. She is a local radio host in Flint. She has her own radio show there, and she will be a guest on the show giving her perspective as an activist, as a resident of Flint, Michigan. I want to enlighten our people to things that maybe they had not before entertained. We just had this past Sunday, midwives to come on and discuss the tradition of midwifery in the Black community and why we need to reclaim that for our people in order to reduce the rate of infant mortality and stillbirth among Black women. And so that's what I want to accomplish. I really want to change the mindsets of our people and kind of open the eyes and the minds of our listeners so that we begin to understand how our own greatness and not wait around for other people to do for us what we need to do for ourselves.
Thank you. Thank you. And certainly I'm a fan of the program. Even when it's gender specific, you know, so I still
thank
do it because I have daughters, you know, so I can pass
yeah.
on information to them, you know, that I heard,
that's
you
right.
know, so, but again,
I would encourage you to do so, definitely, because it's from a woman's perspective, but it's not just for women, because like you said, you have daughters, or you might have nieces, or whomever, you know, a woman who might need that information.
Exactly, exactly. So, again, listeners, if you would like to find out more information, if you would like to volunteer, if you would like to donate funds, if you would like to sponsor the Flint Relocation Project, you can call 1-800-541-1871. Again, that is 1-800-541-1871. That's the correct number, right? Or is that just the hotline?
That's correct.
Okay. Well, I want to thank you for taking time to speak with me and to our listeners today, Sister Zion. And I'm just going to do all I can on my end to let people know about, you know, the reasons they should get involved, because it's obvious there's nobody in the federal government that seems to be coming to their rescue as they seem to go to the rescues of others. So thank you again for your efforts.
Thank you, Scotty. I appreciate it.
You have a good day.
You do the same.
Okay, that concludes our interview portion of the program. I'm telling you, my system is just giving me all sorts of problems. I had to reboot everything, start from scratch, but I'm going to have to do some work post-production. So, again, the Flint Relocation Project is serious. You know, this is serious. These people do need to be relocated. That shouldn't even be a matter of question. I mean, it's just simple logic. You know, poison, lead, water, you know, I don't want to be drinking that. I don't want to be bathing it. You know, it just makes sense. And again, the crime of even the prisoners, you know, now these are captive. These are people that can't even leave if they want to leave. That's being forced to use what the jail knows, the county knows, is poison lead water with other chemicals as well. It's not the Legionnaire disease. Has you know, people been documented with cases of Legionnaire disease. Then again, there is the, you know, blood poisoning. And what I heard, that you can't even get lead out of your system, you know, and it goes to the brain and whatnot, and that's why they have cognitive problems, people who are victims of lead poisoning. And because we've seen it in the black community for how long, you know, lead paint. That's why the government put federal regulations banning lead-based paint. And so, I mean, come on. There is just no acceptable, logical explanation of the government's lack of response and not taking this issue serious as it should be taken. You can't present one to me. You just cannot. It makes absolutely no sense whatsoever. And so, again, sometimes, you know, we just have to take things into our own hands, and this is how I see that as you know, but the government's not coming, so what we gonna do? Now, we say that we got $1 trillion in spending power. It's just black people by themselves. Now, you got 300 million people in this country estimated to be that, you know, could contribute in some kind of way. And some people have, but obviously they've been directing or been misdirected to direct those funds in such a way that it is not really beneficial. It's not beneficial when you need people that need to be. If people want to stay there, they can stay. But as you heard from Sister Zion, you have families that want to leave. You know, when you have a person, all they're trying to do is get from one state to another, not even asking, you know, for anybody to pay for their to live here or there, even though it's due to them in reparations to start repairing their lives from this crime that has been committed. You know, just a bus ticket or a gas card and food money just to, so they can make it sound like somebody trying to make it to their family. You know, I do actually have family that's in Detroit. So I was, if we had a family member in Flint and they needed relocating, all they got to do was come here. So all they did. And so you have situations like that. I mean, the government ain't even doing the least it could do. That $85 million, what did she say? They estimate $1.5 billion to repair the infrastructure, the water infrastructure and whatnot. Well, what is $85 million gonna do? Nothing. She, like she said, just test people. Well, you evacuate them first and then you get them in a safe zone, and that's when you test them, you know. That would be, I would think, the logical order of things. But again, maybe, you know, maybe I'm stupid or something. I don't know. I tend to think a lot differently than a lot of these politicians and so-called managers, government managers and whatnot. So anyway, I don't want to stay on that. Listen, you're listening to Black Talk Radio News. We're going to take a station identification break. Then when I come back, I want to discuss, talking about, you know, not doing the very least you could do. But last Friday, President Obama was asked by a representative, and not just this representative, but they've been asking them. Millions of people have signed petitions asking for the removal of cannabis, also known as weed or pot to some people, you know, removal from the crooked DEA scheduled list of drugs. And he could do this. It's not even a controversial thing to do. He wouldn't even take any kind of heat like what he got from, you know, the conservatives and the Second Amendment advocates. And you know, that was considered controversial. You know, lifting the ban on gay people openly serving in the military, that was more controversial than removing a plant from a list of the most dangerous drugs. You know, it's just one of those things, again, that just defies logic. It defies right thinking. It defies justice. In this case, when you look at how this law, this prohibition is used to disproportionately target and enslave non-white people. It's just really disgusting to me. If you have any comments that you would like to share, the conference line is open. The telephone number is 641-715-3660. That's 641-715-3660. The participant code is 549-032 pound. And of course, you hit *6 and 1 to comment on air. You can also reach out via the Flash phone, which is a web-based application that allows you to dial into the program from anywhere in the world. So, you know, I'm just really disgusted today, people. I'm just really disgusted. These topics, again, the things that we are forced to cover because it's not getting the right kind of coverage and you know, the right type of dialogue to express the seriousness. You know, again, we have to share these. We have to do these stories. I know it gets depressing and whatnot, but you can't allow your depression to drive you to inaction. And so, again, certainly I'm grateful for the people out there who take action. We are going to take a station identification break, and on the other side, we'll come back and jump on this story about the CEO of USA Inc.'s inaction that could, you know, alleviate a whole lot of pressure non-white people are under from racism and white supremacy, the system. We'll be right back.
American Negro collectively is richer than most nations of the world. We have an annual income of more than $30 billion a year, which is more than all of the exports of the United States and more than the national budget of Canada. Did you know that? That's power right there if we know how to prove
it. Make Black Talk Radio your choice for digital black radio. New black media for the new millennium.
Malcolm, what is your purpose here?
Well, my purpose here is to remind the African heads of state that there are 22 million of us in America who are also of African descent. And to remind them also that we are the victims of America's colonialism or American imperialism, and that our problem is not an American problem, it's a human problem. It's not a Negro problem, it's a problem of humanity. It's not a problem of civil rights, but a problem of human rights.
And what do you hope for from this conference?
Well, we hope to bring pressure upon them, or rather we hope to impress upon them the importance of their bringing pressure and world opinion upon the United States to take some meaningful efforts to solve our problem in America. We want them to help us get our problem before the United Nations and charge America with violating our human rights in the same way that South Africa is charged with violating the human rights of our people in that area.
And what sort of reaction have you been getting from the African leaders?
Well, I've gotten a good reaction, a very sympathetic reaction, and an understanding reaction. Many of them have been misinformed by the American government into thinking that black people in America don't identify with Africa, and therefore they restrain themselves from voicing their interest in our problem. I've impressed upon them that our problem is their problem, as well as their problems are our problems.
I'm the deputy chairman of the State of Illinois Black Panther Party, Fred Hampton. I have the pleasure now to introduce who I believe is one of the baddest motherfuckers in the world. A man that did something that a lot of us ought to be very glad that he did. He was a part of making the only party which exists in the United States today that represents the people. As a matter of fact, he was one half. Him and Huey P. Newton started out in 1966. Sometimes I think where some of us were in 1966. I think what we would have said if we'd heard about some niggas going out the street talking about cash and guns, fighting all them police because we didn't know they were pigs out there in the street. And I think I'm speaking for the whole party of the state of Illinois. I know I am. That we love Huey P. Newton. We love Elvis Cleaver. We love Bobby Hutton. We love the Black Panther Party. And we love Chairman Bobby C. We love them because they were the first ones to take a stand against capitalism and racism and said that we'll fight until the end. We said we draw the line somewhere, motherfucker. If you try to pass us, we'll blow your brains out. They were the first ones that came through with the program that was initiated for the benefit of the people. All those things that I named, the reasons why we love them are reasons that they can benefit to us. But let me simply say when I'm introducing Brother Bobby, that we love him because it's lovely to love. Stand by the seat.
All right, we here for some jive conspiracy. You know what we're going to do?
We are going to defend ourselves. Because Huey P. Newton said that power is the ability to define phenomena and make it act in a desired manner. Power is the ability to define phenomena and make it act in a desired manner. What kind of phenomena? Social phenomena. What is the social phenomena? Black people, Mexican American, any kind of people, begins to learn that the social phenomenon is that, in fact, U.S. racist, decadent, capitalist, imperialist America is a holy state. And a holy state exists here, that these pigs are doing nothing but protecting the average businessman and the demagogic politicians, protecting the exploitative system that they got going. That, in fact, we are tired of it, we are sick of it, you've been brutalizing black people, you've been murdering and lynching them, black people are tired of it. That's the vanguard of revolution all of a sudden, and it's phenomenally correct also, but we are concerned with that social phenomena. We are concerned with that exploitation. We are concerned with the oppression that black people and all other people in the world who are suffering the same common oppression that we are suffering today. The thing is that we have the ability to define it. Still, if we have the ability to define it, the only next thing to do is get organized. So when a pig walks up to you, or a pig gets a job with the people, you'll be so organized, you'll be learning some tactics, you'll be learning some revolutionary principles, you'll be having some guns hit out somewhere, you have some proper tactics. That when the pig gets a job with you, the pig gets wrong, you whoop your guns out on him, throw him away, and then you have the ability, in fact, you have made that pig act in a desired manner.
And welcome back to Black Talk Radio News. Scotty Reed in on this broadcast from behind these enemy lines called USA Inc. That's what I call a message music break right there. Now, I'm not going to spend a whole lot of time unless we get some calls. Somebody that can logically explain to me why President Obama did not, again, I say did not, use executive action to remove cannabis, which is the scientific term for pot or weed. And the headline from the Washington Post, Obama says marijuana reform is not on his agenda for 2016. So, again, I submit to you, you know, what good is this man to black voters who voted for this man expecting him to take such action? I mean, that was the whole point. That was the deceptive signal he was sending when he was telling everyone that, yeah, I used to smoke pot. I used to do drugs as a young man. I used to do all of that. I did it all. In fact, I got a clip of it. Let me pull it up because I wrote an article about it. Today, it's in a blog section of Black Talk Radio. Obama refuses to lift a finger to do anything to end the racist drug war. So I'm gonna load up that clip. But he's worthless. He's worthless to the black voter. He sold us a false bill of goods. Okay, that was his whole point of Brad and writing about it in his book. You know, about the Chum gang, you know, he like a chimney or I guess, I don't know, you know, who knows why teenagers and whatnot come up with the names that they come up with. But he belonged to the Chum gang when he was living in Hawaii with his grandparents. And he mentions this in his book. This is common knowledge. And I submit he was sending a signal that, yeah, I'm a, you know, part of the generation that thinks that it's stupid to ruin people's lives over cannabis, a possession when, you know, people been using it for thousands of years, and then the political reasons that it was even prohibited to target black people. So I'm getting in, you know, not even getting into the racist history of it. It just makes good policy backed up by science, and you know, it makes no sense. But again, let's go back to different points over the last, let's say, 8 years of Obama talking about his pot use.
Did you inhale?
I was telling somebody this question. I said that was the point.
Barack Obama said this week that he's tried drugs and it barely got a mention in the news.
Look, you know, I when I was a kid, I inhaled frequently. That was the point.
All right, so you heard him. I mean, it's all a laughing matter. This he up on Jay Leno on the Tonight Show. You know, it's a joke. It's a joke. I used to get high. That was the point. Yes, that was the point. And I mean, even as candidate Obama, before he became president, you know, it was a joke. Then when he wrote his book, I think he made millions off of that book. I think he's getting like $1 million a year in royalties off of that book. He talks about his drug use as a young man. But luckily enough, I guess at that time or wherever he was living in Hawaii, a police state did not exist and he wasn't being stopped and frisked and, you know, drug dogs brought into the school and 'cause he went to one of them, you know, private schools or what they call elite schools where you had to fill out an application to get into it. Of course, his parents were bankers and, you know, his mama used to work for the government. So, yeah. And so anyway, you know, despite this background, you would think this man has some love, you know, but he ain't trying to lift no black people out of nothing. All right. So I'm telling you, man, I'm just totally disgusted with this guy, man. I just don't have You know, he's young. I think he maybe we might be around the same age, but I mean, it's just disgusting that he wouldn't take the simple action of signing an executive order telling the Drug Enforcement Agency to remove cannabis from its scheduled list of most dangerous drugs in the world. When, you know, you got at least some poll site 58% public approval on that. You got congressmen, you know, writing you letters and saying, you know, this is the right thing to do. This is the reform that I guess we're willing to, you know, give the people and whatnot. We'll give them that bone right there. And he want to keep the, you know, that's like keeping the bone away from the dog. Don't even want the dog to have no scraps. Man, he's cruel. He's cruel. I mean, for this man to say, if we just even look at it from a logical, scientific point of view, which he has stated in 2014 that pot is no more dangerous than alcohol. Well, the actual science says alcohol is far more dangerous than pot. Far more dangerous. So he knows the science, but yet he refused to act on the science. I mean, and then he uses his bully pulpit to talk about climate change deniers. So why is he in so much denial over whether or not denial over the fact that cannabis, the plant, does not belong on there? And then we seeing in all these white states, don't want to make it a racist thing, but it certainly appears to be one. We see in all these predominantly white states where it has been legalized, either for medical use. So again, you know, the whole point, what they're saying on the scheduled list of drugs, that marijuana has no medicinal benefit. It's just that dangerous. It's all bad. Leads to addiction and all that, even though science says coffee is more addictive. But we ain't trying to, you know, lock up people for their coffee addictions. And this man, you know, he still uses alcohol. He might have given up the cigarettes, but he was addicted to that. So, I mean, I don't know what to say other than he just worthless, man. He worthless to black people as a constituency, as voters. Michelle Alexander wrote that book, The New Jim Crow. So I'm sure he read the book. He likes to read books. I'm sure he pays attention to policy debates that's out in the public. People, you know, giving college lecture tours and you know, this being debated. I'm sure he has gotten the millions upon millions of signatures to petitions on this issue. But yet he just refuses to act, man. Why? Why? The only logical conclusion that I can come up with is that he supports 21st century slavery and human trafficking. He don't want to see no cops lose no jobs, which I call slave catchers. He doesn't want to see a reduction in the jail population or the prison population. I mean, he's just trying to give up the very minimum amount, trying to minimize the damage to you know, the profits of the enslavers. That's the only logical conclusion I can come up with, people. So let's not go anywhere and say Scotty Reed was just bashing, you know, President Obama and for no reason at all, just talking bad about black people. No, dude, let's just throw color all out of this. Let's throw proxy racism out of it just from a scientific, logical people point of view. This don't make no sense. It's not logical. Unless he's protecting the profits of the people that's making up most of the money by it being prohibited. We can even say the pharmaceutical industry, how much they've been, you know, supporting him throughout the years. Because they certainly don't want to see cannabis, a plant that has pain-relieving properties, and then people not going to the store buying Bayer aspirin or Tylenol or Advil. You know, they just grow their little plants like they would a tomato plant and use as needed. Don't cost them nothing. So there's many economic reasons that people don't want to see it removed, and so he must be in a pocket or something. I can't come up with any other logical. Somebody can tell me where this makes sense. I would greatly appreciate it. Just please, just explain this to me in a way that's logical and makes sense and, you know, can explain this. I mean, again, he's done stuff for the gay community. Not saying he shouldn't have done what he did. Not saying that. You know, did what he did for the bankers, that special interest group. But again, they're 21st century enslavers invested in it. Did what he did for, you know, the auto industry in Detroit and in Flint, in that area, bailed them out, then turned his back on the people that I've been reading saying the car industry is responsible for poisoning the water in Flint. Because these chemicals just didn't come from nowhere now. Somebody been dumping something somewhere, but I suspect we'll never get that far into a criminal investigation because they're not treating it as one. So, I mean, but he did stuff for them. Who else he do some stuff? He do stuff for Israel every year. But I remember the summer, you know, Israeli Gaza offensive, and they ran out of bullets and smart bombs and stuff. And he signed into law special legislation allowing them to purchase a whole bunch of more bombs and bullets to kill defenseless people with in Palestine. So, and then he signs off on their $1 billion a year paycheck. So he do stuff for the Israeli Jewish political constituency. Who else he do stuff for? I mentioned the gay community and lifting the military ban. Let me see, who else? He ain't really did nothing for the Hispanics. He's actually has increased enforcement of immigration laws and has deported people in record numbers. So, you know, people that say that he's weak on immigration or illegal immigration, that just doesn't, you know. So he doing something for the people that's against, you know, providing refugee status to these people in these other countries that the United States policy, including the drug war policy. The drug war. See, this stuff is really deep when you peel back the layers. You know what I'm saying? Because, see, the federal government, they give police officers grants and stuff like that to meet quotas. You know, if you're not making the arrest, if your department ain't turning in the arrest, then you ain't qualifying for this grant from the executive branch of the federal government, which is totally run by, without any interference from Congress, by the CEO of USA Inc. That would be Barack Obama. So when you peel back the layers, I mean, it's a lot of people making a lot of money, a lot of people being employed just from cannabis prohibition. And the morality of ruining millions of, you know, people's lives and putting them in a category of where, you know, they're basically made into a slave. When they strip you of your rights, when you have no rights, even if you're not within those four walls on a prison plantation, you're still a slave because you don't have the rights of a citizen. That's what those lifetime punishments, they got passed in the 90s during the Clinton administration. I'm just so done with this, man. I was trying to hold out some hope, you know, that in his last year, he gonna try to do something. This man telling us he has no interest in doing anything. He ain't trying to do the very least. And people will try to cite things he done for black people in the area of criminal justice, and they'll cite that 18-1 crack cocaine disparity sentencing. Number one, people shouldn't even be enslaved over that. But number two, 18-1 is still racist. And then thirdly, he won a case in federal court to prevent it from becoming retroactive, keeping tens of thousands of people locked up in a federal prison on a plantation, probably working for Unicor. So, I mean, every road points to, or every lead points to, the continuation of supporting modern day slavery and human trafficking. It's always been a major pillar of the U.S. capitalist system, going back to the founding capitalists, the founding enslavers, George Washington, Thomas Jefferson, and all of them. So, you know, nobody seems to have a counter argument and telling me, you know, showing me where I'm retarded or I'm crazy or, you know, I've been poisoned by lead water. I'm going to keep putting demands on him. Because to put demands on him, even though I know he's useless, the people, there are other people that's hearing those demands. For those that believe there are, you know, nameless, faceless puppet masters controlling everything, sock puppet puppets, as I've heard Johanna call it, all this sock puppetry. But again, if enough people right now were demanding President Obama right now and saying that makes no logical sense, hitting them up on Twitter, he getting blasted with phone calls and whatnot and saying you need to reverse your position right now. If we just got a million people, regardless of their racial classification, economic status, none of that, none of them labels, let's throw those out, and just say we get a million people calling him on the phone and putting him on blast, and calling him on his foolishness and not accepting the continued violation of people's human rights over something he acknowledges shouldn't even be happening. But we have what, maybe what, 11 months left in his administration, so I don't think there will be any pardons coming forth for any political prisoners. No, I most certainly don't think that he is going to, you know, change the federal government's view or the executive branch, the FBI and all of them, remove Assata Shakur from the, you know, most wanted list, which he put her on there. I just don't see anything coming from this man that his legacy is going to be one, in my view, is that a black man who promised change, who then was able to become the first so-called black president with the help of black people. He wouldn't have even gotten in there without black people. Of course, all the other millions of votes he got are non-black people matter. But if black people had stayed home like they stay home on off-year elections, like, you know, the midterms and stuff, man, he would not have been president. Mitt Romney would be president. And how did he repay them? Nothing. With nothing. But some Al Green songs, some Negro spirituals, some imitations of the black preacher up in the church, pictures of him and Michelle giving each other a fist bump in front of a bunch of white people, photographs of the black president playing basketball on the White House grounds. Let me see. What else? What else did we get? You know, so all we got was imagery, really. You know, nothing else, nothing substantial, nothing that you could point to and say to your children, you know, I was a part of forcing the system to alleviate, you know, pressure off of you. So you are not stopping frisk. And again, let's also throw in the police brutality. Why do y'all think there's so much police contact between citizens and the slave catchers? Because of laws like this. That's why. And what do too often those encounters lead to? Shootings. So, in fact, if you remove the federal ban and the people mobilize to legalize just cannabis in their states, I guarantee you probably the death count, the known death count, because they don't always report, they're not required to. It's not a condition of them getting federal grants because the CEO hasn't made it one. He hasn't issued that executive order, so we don't have a full body count of the homicides being created by police or committed by police. Last year was over 1,200, I think. I bet you that will be cut in half to 600. If they were not carrying out the federal mandated prohibition of cannabis. Now, of course, they still going to find another way to stop and harass the people because they got all them other drug laws in. We seen in Ferguson. So, I mean, it's a constant war, man. It's constant battles everywhere to be fought. You can't just throw up your hands and surrender, but I'm throwing up my hands holding out just a little tiny sliver of hope that I thought that this man had an ounce of humanity in his bones, and he ain't got none. He trying to do the very least he can do. His legacy is shit, in my opinion. Anyway, that's my broadcast. I'm not going to bore you anymore with facts. So I will be back on air tomorrow at 4 o'clock p.m. Eastern time. Coming up later in about a half hour, a little over a half hour, will be Tando Radio Show. No, a little under half hour, 23 minutes. Tando Radio Show will be on air with Brother Dave hosting. And I will catch you tomorrow at 4 o'clock p.m. Eastern time, and we will just see what's popping tomorrow in terms of the political and social news. Want to get thank our guest, Sister Zion, for joining us. Make sure y'all check her out on Sunday afternoons at 12:30 p.m. Eastern time. So recognize the fact that you live behind these enemy lines of USA Inc. It's a battlefield out there. I'm telling you, it really is. People getting killed. If you live in Flint, I don't need to tell you it's a battlefield out there. Look what they did to half y'all city. Bombed it. The U.S. military bombed it. But, yeah, you know, we're going to act like, what's his name? Mr. Moore didn't say anything about that. So it's a literal battlefield out there, and people, casualties are being created. Look at them casualties in Flint. That's just one little town. So we need to develop codification, battlefield strategies, battlefield awareness. We definitely got to come together as a cohesive unit. I know we ain't going to get 100% participation of everybody trapped behind the enemy lines, but if we could just get doggone 25%, man, we could transform so much. Y'all just don't know. But, you know, until we start taking these things serious, we're going to be stuck in our current predicament. So, with all that said, I hope that you survive to hear me on these airways again tomorrow. Peace and blessings to all.
Now, let us begin with the modern period of, I guess we could start with 1956, for our generation. This was the beginning of the rise of Dr. Martin Luther King. Dr. King decided that in Montgomery, Alabama, black people had to pay the same prices on the buses as did white people, but we had to sit in the back. And we could only sit in the back if every available seat was taken by a white person. If a white person was standing, a black person could not sit. So Dr. King and his associates got together and said, "This is inhuman. We will boycott your bus system." Now understand what a boycott is. A boycott is a passive act. It is the most passive political act that anyone can commit, a boycott. Because what the boycott was doing was simply saying, "We will not ride your buses." no sort of antagonism. He was not even verbally violent. He was peaceful. Dr. King's policy was that nonviolence would achieve the gains for black people in the United States. His major assumption was that if you are nonviolent, if you suffer, your opponent will see your suffering and will be moved to change his heart. That's very good. He only made one fallacious assumption. In order for nonviolence to work, your opponent must have a conscience. The United States has none. And well, thank you.